Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
And you, your box is clicked.
I'm in.
We're ready to go.
And you started recording.
We're recording.
Already, yeah.
I don't look like I'm the wrong
guy. Oh, damn it. I showed up as Matt Damon.
How's your voice? It's back a little bit, right?
A little bit, yeah. I still want to keep it in like the low register.
Yeah, I don't hear that quite as much.
Yeah. Thanks.
This podcast is brought to you in part by Dragon Shield. Use code PLAY2WIN5 at the affiliate link down below for 5% off to help support the show.
Welcome to the Play to Win podcast, where we talk about winning in CEDH. I'm Cam.
Sorry, I didn't do a sound check.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm Dylan. That sounds too loud, I feel like. Is it? Nah, well, I guess it's not that loud. La la la, can you talk again?
This week, we're going to be talking about a couple of different topics that a bunch of our patrons submitted, and we're just going to run through all of them.
Welcome. Well, okay. Yeah, I think that's got it right. Okay.
All right.
How
cool.
Does it go?
Welcome to the Play to Win podcast, where we talk about.
And I'm Dylan. This week, we're talking about a grab bag of sorts. Patrons sent in some questions as part of their perks. We're going to talk about a few different things that some patrons want to know from us for some reason.
Yeah, exactly. So we're going to start off with the meat and potatoes of the episode.
I love potatoes.
Me too. But I guess if you have all the potatoes, and I guess I have to have
you
the
have
meat.
To, yeah, because I'm not doing any of the meat.
It should be the other way around. Because I'll have all the meat, you should have all the potatoes.
I agree. Do you have a favorite potato real quick before we get into this? Because I kind of go back rapidly. Like the other day I had waffle fries and I was like, I think inching up on the list.
Oh, you don't mean like russet versus yellow.
Not a breed of potato. Like a prepared form of, like what's your final form, your favorite final form of potato?
I mean, it's definitely a French fry.
It's a French fry.
How is it not a French fry?
Dude, I don't know. You're probably right. Mashed potatoes slap. Like you're probably right. I think French fry is probably it. Tater tots sometimes could be.
Tater
tots not better than a French fry.
A tater tot is a French fry wannabe.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I like it as like when I'm gotten too used to French fries, a little tater tot mixes things up.
See, I will always go for home fries tots if I have the option to.
And home fries is kind of like shredded potato in a mash type form. Normally,
your Waffle House potatoes.
When you go to Waffle House,
you get them chunked, covered, and smothered.
Excellent.
That's how I get
mine. Would that be your favorite type of potato?
No, a fry. Type of potato.
What type of fry? Steak fry, thin boardwalk fry, waffle fry, curly fry?
Okay. Hold up.
Because curly fry is wonderful, but I couldn't have curly fries every day. It's a special treat.
Curly fry.
Yeah,
it's definitely not curly fry. They are good, but like it's too much of the seasoning and the flavor versus the fry, like the potato and the oil and the crispiness of that.
When you have the French fry, you want to enjoy the potato aspect.
I want to enjoy the potato aspect, but it can also be like a sweet craver too, because it can also be a shovel for ketchup as well too.
Oh, how horrible. I feel like ketchup is the worst dipping sauce for French fries. I think it's very overrated.
What do you dip?
Barbecue sauce if I must, or honestly, truly, if the French fry is just a good fry, nothing. A fry is just good.
Oh, no, they're great on their own, yeah. But sometimes I have a sweet tooth.
Oh, sure. So can we go, is it a regular French fry or is it like a...
I'm going to go with regular French
fry. Not steak fry, because steak fries are extra potato-y.
All right, if I have to choose a specific type of fry, I got to go McDonald's fry.
McDonald's, just straight up McDonald's French fry.
Because they're always going to be...
That's your favorite type of potato?
They're always going to be good.
Oh,
right?
No, like, this is never something that wrong. I'm learning about you. This is terrible.
I mean, what's a better type of potato that's always goes... True. Better than that.
I go back and forth on this a lot. Like I said, when I had the waffle fry the other day, I said maybe this is the top one because waffle fries are perfect for dipping. If you have a good sauce you want to dip in, waffle fries can shovel a lot of the sauce in. I think I'm at the point now in my life where a very thin shoelace style French fry that you would get on a boardwalk with like the vinegar sprinkled on top or like a little bit of dip.
Okay, yeah.
I think that's my favorite form of potato right now.
Interesting. Okay, so it's still a fry.
It's still a fry, yeah. But
you're a little bit more particular about what
crispy.
You want on top.
Yeah, crispy. Yeah.
Okay, I'm not a big vinegar guy, but that does sound like a good fry.
No, it's awesome. Yeah. Okay. All right. Sorry.
So you could do that with a McDonald's fry too. You could just pump
McDonald's
them full of
fries
vinegar.
Are not vegan. Weirdly, they make them with
because the oil. oil is oil like is beef oil.
Animal
is the
fat
beef
or
oil.
Something. Yeah, last I checked anyway. So.
No, I would totally believe that McDonald's does not care to swap out their oil for their fries. Yeah. I would 100% on board with
That's
that.
That's a common answer, though. A lot of people say McDonald's for some reason, which I find disgusting because I think McDonald's is disgusting. But I think that's a lot of people's answers. The
I
fries.
Mean, it is disgusting, but it's like yeah. so good at
it's,
the same time.
It's like yeah. part of American culture.
I mean, if I think about it, like, what is consistently the best fry? It's always the McDonald's fry.
Really?
For me. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I mean, Red Robins are endless. Like, maybe there's
Red
that.
Robins, I love those steak fries. Rachel yeah. recently, my fiance, she doesn't like fries that are like a potato. So, like, unlike you, she doesn't want the fries to be potato-like at all.
So, does she like the curly fries instead?
No, she or? Likes the shoelace fries, actually. I got oh, this, okay. this potato preference I actually obtained from her. But she does not like the steak fries from Red Robin because they're very potato-y.
Oh,
that's really, like, a good
yeah.
chunk of potato, which
I like.
They're
very fluffy in the middle. Very they're fluffy. Like, they're the soft on the outside, yeah. but fluffy in the middle.
But that is something to consider when thinking of best potato is at Red Robin, the steak fries, not only are they okay, but they're limitless.
They are limitless.
McDonald's,
yeah.
you have to pay for each fry. That takes it down a notch.
That is also true. And I do also think that all sizes of McDonald's fries are the same amount of fries no matter what.
Oh,
they
really?
Don't actually it's, fit more. They're yeah. just putting the same amount of scoops
in. They make the tube like longer and thinner, though.
Yeah,
like, it's taller and
yeah,
thinner.
Maybe like the paper bag that they give you is the only one that actually yeah. has fewer fries in it, but a medium and a large is all the same, I think, and they just get you to pay more.
So McDonald's fries are getting a 5 out of 5 from you? So
okay, no, because now I've talked myself out of McDonald's fries.
They suck,
I talked
yeah.
myself into Red Robin's fries because Red Robin's does the campfire sauce, which Courtney loves.
Oh.
She's my fiance too, by the way.
I'm nice, just, congratulations.
Thanks. I'm just lobbing that out there real quick. They also
well,
have
I don't know what
the,
campfire sauce is. That some sort of mayo ketchup?
No, it's barbecue sauce.
Okay.
And one of those other two ingredients.
Because anytime it's a sauce that doesn't exist, I always think that's got to be mayo ketchup.
Well, that's all it is.
Right?
Yeah.
It's normally a mayo ketchup, but this one's a barbecue
this
sauce.
This one's that, yeah.
With mayo?
I think it's with mayo. Barbecue sauce and mayo. And then they also have like the Red Robin seasoning, which is really good too.
Mayo is disgusting when you think about
mayo
it.
Mayo is absolutely disgusting.
Why don't we just
yeah.
take like eggs and make it into a spread?
And just, yeah, we just put it on like yeah. a ham sandwich okay. then.
All right, that's it. We're not talking about potatoes anymore. Should we talk about these questions?
Let's talk about these questions. Yeah. Okay. Let's start with what Joshua Day says, which is, yeah. I'd love to submit a topic about how to choose your mana base for your deck. Like, what rocks are the right rocks and what lands to run? Should you be running rituals or should you be cutting them?
Yeah, that's a great question. It definitely depends on what colors you're in. It depends on what your commander's doing. It depends on what your strategy is. First couple thoughts that come to my mind. What we're thinking, I guess, like, should we compare, like, rituals to signets and artifacts and
well,
stuff? Or do you have somewhere you want to go with this?
No, I like what you said better. Let's do what
okay.
you said better.
Yeah, let's keep
yeah.
it with what I said. Rituals are normally instants and sorceries
yep.
that produce a temporary amount of mana. Mm-hmm. So Dark Ritual is a 1 mana sorcery. Nope, it's a 1 mana instant that makes 3 mana. So it's a +2 ritual is kind of how I think of it in my head because cost 1 mana, but then it makes 3, so that's you're up 2 mana. Mm-hmm. Rite of Flame is a red that makes 2 red, so it's a +1 ritual. There's a bunch of other rituals. Unfortunately, since we're in singleton format, we only get one of them. So things like Culling Ritual.
That is
week.
A ritual.
That is technically a ritual, but that's not what I'm thinking of. Culling the Weak and Cabal Ritual are other rituals that are like Dark Ritual that give you a +3 or a +2 or a +4 of mana.
But it's temporary mana.
Temporary
I think
mana.
That's the most important thing to note about the rituals, whereas mana rocks are permanent mana that you'll have access to. All of them that come into play untapped will be able to produce you mana right away so long as you meet the requirement
right.
that some of them might have.
So like for mana rocks, we have Sol Ring, Chromox, Mox Diamond. There's Lotus Petal is kind of a mana rock, but it's also weirdly a ritual because it's temporary.
Yeah, it fits both realms, weirdly enough. Yeah.
Mana Vault and Grim Monolith are also kind of more like rituals most of the time because they're just mana for the one turn unless you can do something, like use a key to untap them or something like that.
But then you also have like the talismans too, like there's signets and talismans that are 2 mana rocks that help you color fix in particular. A lot of these other ones, you know, they either make you all 5 colors of mana or they make you no colors of mana. And these are like this kind of in-between spot.
Bingo. There's also Mana Dorks, Birds of Paradise, Noble Hierarch, stuff like that. There's things like Enduring Vitality and Earthcraft that allow you to turn your creatures into sort of Mana Dorks. These strategies have been getting a lot more popular recently, especially with things like Valley Floodcaller that allow you to untap your specific creatures every once in a while to use them for more mana. But these are the three, I guess, main categories, is at least how I categorize them, is mana dork, creature that makes mana rock, an artifact that makes mana long term, and then a ritual, which is an instant or sorcery that makes a burst of mana right now. Obviously, certain things are going to cross over in different aspects, but these are the main types of ramp that we're looking for CDH. Things like Rampant Growth, Farseek, things that put lands into play, those don't really see play in our format because there hasn't really been one that's been at a good enough rate to see play. Stuff like Nature's Lore, that's for 2 mana, put an untapped forest into play. That's the closest that I've seen, and some weird decks do play shit like that sometimes, but that is notably worse than stuff like Arcane Signet and all of the talismans, I think, mainly because, one, you have to have the thing to search for. Opposition Agent can turn it off. There's a few different reasons why just like having the Arcane Signet will work better with more things in your deck, but if your deck is super heavy on lands, stuff like Nature's Lore, and what's the other one that's the same card? There's another
Three Visits.
Both of these cards are the same rate as Arcane Signet. I think they're close enough for ramp spells, but as far as other ramp, there's really nothing else that like is at an efficient enough rate to see play in CDH that gets lands into play from your deck, right?
Yeah, exactly. Because most of them are getting like either a basic land or they're trying to fix your colors. Like Farseek, like we keep mentioning, can fix our colors and get, you know, the dual lands, which is really nice. But a lot of them force them to come into play tapped. Even the ones that allow them to come into play untapped are kind of fighting for the same space that the talismans already exist in and fetch lands are already doing. So the fewer in colors you get, the less that you want Farseeks and the 2-mana green ramp cards because you already have lands that have very few targets already.
As far as when to choose which method, I think most of the time, if you're building a CDH deck, you want to build the best deck possible. Not most of the time, all of the time. That's what CDH is.
Bingo.
There are some, you know, nuances to every conversation, of course. But when we're playing CDH, we're trying to build a deck that can win as much as possible. So realistically, you should be touching into as many of these different things as your deck can that makes sense to do. Normally, mana dorks are really only going to be seen in green creature decks, and also decks, I would say, that want to last a little bit longer. With a mana dork or an Arcane Signet, you want to have your mana over the course of several turns. You want to use your Arcane Signet 3, 4, 5 times. You want it to be around several times so it makes enough mana. Whereas if you're looking for more of the ritual side of things, you're more interested in explosive turns. So you want to cast a big ad nauseum. You want to cast a whole bunch of spells in one turn. Mm-hmm. That's when you're going to be looking more towards rituals and stuff like that. So like the Dark Rituals, the Rite of Flames, Jeskha's Will in particular. Also, a lot of it is going to matter just what color you're in.
I think that's a big part too, because like green on its own does not have access to any traditional rituals. It only has mana dorks in CEDH that it really has access to. Whereas like red and black have access to all of the rituals and no mana dorks. So like it really does kind of depend on where you're going with that. But I think it also, like you were saying, kind of depends on the resources that you're trying to use too. Like if you're trying to lean more into Gaia's Cradle because you're in green, you want to play more of the mana dorks. And if you want to, you know, take advantage of Eldritch Evolution or like Neoform, playing Collector Oof, like these are all cards that benefit from you staying away from the artifact mana and the rituals and leaning more into a more permanent based mana in your creatures that really allows you to take advantage of the fact that they are creatures doing this.
And I think what's tricky is also deciding when it's appropriate to lean into the Collector Oof thing or the all my cards are tied together in specific nuanced ways and when it's appropriate to say, let me just play the most powerful shit. You know what I mean? Like that line I think is actually bizarrely gray in CDH because there is a certain point where if your deck has enough powerful synergies, it is more beneficial to you to not include the most powerful cards, period, because your card synergies are stronger than the most powerful cards. But this isn't always the case. So there are times when it's going to be right, let me play Collector Oof because I'm on this many creatures. And there are going to be times that just because I can play Collector Oof, I also have the One Ring in my deck and I have one or two artifacts that I don't want to bother shutting off. So maybe it's not right now.
Yeah, it kind of ends up, even if you are leaning into mana dorks, like you still kind of almost just don't want Collector Oof. Maybe that's just like a bad example because Collector Oof is so bad right now.
Yeah.
The talismans then in particular and like the mana rocks, I feel like is something that every single deck can take advantage of having. And there's just some decks that again might want it more. Maybe this is where the Collector Oof thing comes in, right? There's just some decks that maybe want to take advantage of them more than others. But I feel like there are some mana rocks that I'm including in all of my decks and there's some that I'm only including in decks of certain colors, like or how many colors I'm in.
Yeah.
And it depends on the colors that I'm in too, what ones I want.
Yeah.
So should we let them
yeah,
in?
Yeah, you can let them in.
Welcome to the podcast, Jack.
A couple things about Signets and when to play them in which decks. Normally five color decks. I'm really only playing Arcane Signet, maybe Felwar Stone.
Ooh,
true.
Yeah, that's probably true.
All of the talismans only provide two colors, and when you're in five colors, only providing two colors just doesn't feel like enough. You know what I mean? Like what you're looking for out of Arcane Signet is yes, the uptick in mana, but it's also the helping fixing your mana. That's why it's important in the five color. So something like a Talisman of Dominance is really good in a blue-black deck because it fixes your mana. It gives you blue and it gives you black. But in a five-color deck, it only gives you two-fifths of your possible options. So yes, it is still helpful and powerful, but it's not the same ratio of power because you have more colors in your deck. It doesn't fix your mana quite as perfectly.
Now, you've been playing more five-color decks recently than I have. I've been on like two-color decks solely recently.
Yeah, so you're playing all the Talismans, not all the Signets always, but sometimes Signets.
Vivi's playing, is it Signet? Just yeah. Because like it's also a Vivi trigger thing. That is, I'm not in love with it, but I think it's still fine there. But like in these five color decks, is it more important to have like Grim Monolith then?
So it depends. So I find Grim Monolith is important if you need the three colorless mana specifically. So if you're in an Ad Nauseam deck, Grim Monolith goes in for me.
Yeah.
But if you're in like, what other five color decks are like Sisse? I'm not playing Grim Monolith in Sisse because
that makes a lot of sense.
I can't really do anything with that three mana. I am playing Mana Vault because I think the rate is just so insane that Mana Vault is better than Grim Monolith.
What about Terra? Are you on Grim Monolith in Terra?
No, I cut it out, weirdly enough.
Really?
Even though that is an Ad Nauseam deck, and maybe that one should be, but since I'm in five color, I felt like I had a wider range of mana that I like almost didn't need to dip into Grim Monolith. But now that I'm saying it out loud, that feels like I might be wrong.
But that is because of your mana base, right? Like your lands are so good in five color decks that you don't have to worry about playing extra slow mana rocks that help you fix. You'd rather just run the mana vaults that can just, even though it's not helping you fix any of your colors, you're just getting the quick burst of mana to still cast like your Smothering Tithe or something.
Right, yeah. And Grim Monolith is probably like the 100th card in that 99, realistically. Yeah. It probably should be the one in there. But yes, like you said, because of Command Tower, Mana Confluence, City of Brass, Gemstone.
Starting Town. I'd like to note out Starting Town. Yeah. I think that card's actually been really, really, really good so far.
Yeah, I think there are Exotic Orchard. There are a ton of options for a five-color deck. It's pretty easy. And plus the Fetch Land to get you whichever duel you need at the right time. It's
fetch
pretty easy to be
five-color.
Fetch
Lands are five-color lands. Yeah. You can, like, Flooded Strand can get you, like, any land,
any color,
right?
Yeah.
There's no way that it can't get you a
there is,
color,
yeah.
Right?
Well, Flooded Strand can't get you Taiga. You know what I mean? Everyone can't get you, but it can get you every color.
Yeah, but it can get you red and green in other different ways,
exactly.
Though. Yeah. You just have to be a little bit smart with how you're fetching.
So for Arcane Signet and Felwar Stone, they basically go in just about every deck for me. But when I want to go into Talismans, normally that's, like, three and sometimes four, maybe a four color deck. I'll play one talisman for my most popular colors.
I just look at Moxfield and see what my most popular
Which
colors
is
are.
Probably
and that's
blue black. You know, I'll play a talisman of dominance in a four color deck, maybe, but even still, then maybe, like I said, once you're in four colors, you have more access to other types of ramp, so you don't need to dip into the talismans, which are, in my opinion, I guess the Signets are the worst playable ramp in CDH, and then Talismans are just above them.
I would say that Signets are only playable if they're synergistic with your commander. Like, I wouldn't run Golgari Signet in a Jund Ad Nauseam deck ever, right?
But like, in Kinnan, the Signet makes a little bit more sense.
In Vivi, the Signet makes a little bit more sense.
Right, yeah.
In Atali, it makes no sense.
Right, in Vivi, it's a Vivi trigger. That's still a two-mana Vivi trigger.
Exactly,
fuck it. You know what I mean? In Atali, it's too slow. It doesn't do anything.
The big problem with them is that you need mana in order to ramp with them. The other talisman, when you spin into it, it can just make red mana
right
on
away.
Its own, and I can ride a flame, and I can just like kind of spin off from there. But like if I don't have the push to be able to use it, then I can't do anything with it. That's why I don't even like it in Vivi. Like, I would like it to be something else, but it's still good ramp that helps me get Vivi out on turn two if I need to, like off of an Ancient Tomb or something. That's still super helpful.
And I think it's also helpful to, like, when trying to figure out which Signets should I play, it's helpful to, like, what are you comparing it to? So, like, at the two-mana slot, you're comparing it to Arcane Signet and Felwar Stone. How much deeper than that do you really need to go a lot of the time?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, like, in Rog'Sai, I play both of the blue talismans, the blue-black one and the blue-red one, but I don't play the red-black one. Is that true? Wait a minute. Now I'm not sure. I think that's wrong. Oh, fuck. Now I don't know. I feel so uncomfortable. I think I maybe do play all of them.
You might be on all of them.
Yeah.
I feel like that's some newer Rog'Sai tech, because I feel like there were days where Rog'Sai
was
not on any of
one.
Them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I've certainly been on at least one to two of the talismans in Rog'Sai for a little bit now. I just can't remember right now if I'm playing
are
the third
on
one.
City of Traders?
City of Traders, the land that taps for two.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Of course.
Yeah. The more of the soul lands that you run, the more often that I want to see, like, Grim Monolith and Mana Vault in my deck, like, the more talismans I want to run on top of that, too.
I guess that's also type of a type of category that we didn't talk about with the other three, is that just like soul lands, like lands that tap for two or more mana.
Oh, because we didn't even talk about lands in the mana bases. Yet,
right,
so.
Yeah. So like, I guess that is like a fourth form of ramp, even though it's sort of, it's just land. I don't know. It's weird to define it as another form of ramp, but it is.
But that is what it is.
So like Ancient Tomb, City of Traders.
Gaia's Cradle's in there.
Gaia's
too.
Cradle definitely counts as there. Sarah's Sanctum, the one that taps for enchantments.
If you're built around that, yeah, it can be really good. Yeah.
And then what's the other one that sacks to?
That's funny. Joshua Day submitted this topic, and that was his deck that we used in that episode.
That is,
yeah.
What's the sack for two mana, the colorless lands? Taps for Crystal Vein?
Who's Crystal Vein?
Nice. That's another one, too. So, yeah, and then I don't know where else I'm going with that.
Those are the ramp options.
Those
with
I'm
your lands, really. Yeah,
right,
I know.
Already.
It's already so warm. Yeah.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When to dip into which one of these other forms?
We should talk about these. When do you want to play these rituals?
Okay.
I got a list of all the rituals I could think of that are good. Dark ritual.
If I'm playing black.
Every black deck.
I think pretty, I guess it's not true. Heavy stacks maybe doesn't.
If I'm playing black and Necropotence, I certainly want it. If I'm playing black and any good three drops in my deck.
If you're playing any rituals at all, dark ritual is like the first
one
you put in your
deck.
If you've decided you want any aspect of explosiveness, dark ritual is the first one to go to, specifically because it's a +2 ritual at one mana, which does not exist without downside in any other way. It's like the best rate that we have.
Exactly.
Any other rate that's higher than +2 requires a more setup or anything like that, or it's more mana or something. Like dark ritual is just like the standard for rituals.
Now where you don't want this is if you can't make up the card disadvantage that dark ritual gives you for this being short term mana, right? If this isn't powering out something like an early Timna or a early Rhystic Study or
Talion.
An Ad Nauseam and Necropotence Talion, that's a great example too. You're not going to want this so badly.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You have to be able to net gain that advantage back somehow because you are going down a card for effectively nothing if you don't gain the cards back.
Now, Dylan, when do you want to play Cabal Ritual?
Cabal Ritual also whenever I'm playing black, but like specifically the same times I'm playing Dark Ritual. I play them. I guess there is a weird world where I wouldn't play Cabal over Dark Ritual, but realistically, Cabal is on enough that it's worth it still. It's a +3 ritual when it's turned on, which is also very insane, and at 2 mana, nothing hits that. So being a +3 ritual when it's on, being a +1 ritual when it's at 2 mana when is compared to like Desperate Ritual, that's a pretty bad rate. You don't really want that. We're not going to see Desperate Ritual or Pyretic Ritual very often. I know Rao plays them and Rao has been doing really well recently, but
Atali's been on them and that's part of Atali's speed boost.
Maybe I don't know anything. Maybe just rituals are really good. You know what I mean? But that is kind of a rate that I'm less excited about. But Cabal Ritual, 2 mana to make 5 mana is kind of insane, especially because Ad Nauseam is 5 mana. 5 mana, you can do a lot with that.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Basically, whenever I play Dark Ritual, I'm playing Cabal Ritual.
Now, when do you want Culling the Week?
Commander's got to be like 2 or 1 or less mana.
And my commander has to be it, right? Like, I don't like...
Well,
I don't like having to rely on things like, one of my 3 pirates that my Timna Malcolm deck's playing, or one of my, you know, Ragavan, or like these other like really small things.
Realistically,
like that.
Timna Krom plays it a lot of the time, and they have Timna and a 3-mana, 5-mana commander. I think if you're playing Ad Nauseam, if you're playing,
if you're playing a lot of creatures,
if you're playing Ad Nauseam and Necropotence, if you're in that strategy, And you have like more than, I don't even think you need that many, more than 15 creatures or a cheap commander.
A commander that you want to play before one of those effects.
Right, yeah. Like you, ideally the card is obviously best if you're a commander or some, if you have cheap creatures to get rid of early. But even in a deck like Timna Krom where you're just like looking to kind of explode later in the game where like you only have two mana up. Psych, I'm going to culling away my Timna. I have five mana. I'll cast ad nauseam in response to something. Like that surprise explosiveness, culling is really good for. And it's another plus three ritual. So like on rate, it's just as good as...
Oh, the rate's insane.
Cabal Ritual. Nothing is better than four mana for one mana. That is like insane. I just talked about Dark Ritual is the best rate, which it is because culling requires you to sacrifice a creature. This setup.
It's just a weird investment you have to put in in front of it, which is why it's so good with Rograk. But maybe I should be less afraid of sacrificing my Timnas to
it. Sack your Timnas to it, yeah. I think these are probably the three best rituals that we have in CDH.
Yeah, on rate for what they do.
On rate.
Yeah.
Is Jessica's Will the next card you're going to talk about?
Jessica's Will is the next card I'm going to talk about.
Cracked
there's,
in a, half.
There's another one that's on here there's too that okay. I'm thinking of.
Jessica's Will on power is certainly more than these three cards we talked about because it also has the potential to give you card advantage, which is insane.
And also like does weird, awesome synergy stuff with commanders like Quirk.
It's a Ristic Buster. If someone's been Ristic Study drawing the whole time and you were able to somehow sneak in a silence and get it resolved and you go, oh boy, Jessica's Will for 40 targeting you or something, like it can help punish the Ristic Study metagame that we're in right now, which is why it's so powerful. But
one of the best ways to get a turn one Atali.
Dude, yes. Every time I see this on turn one, it's a nightmare for Atali.
Oh, yeah.
What do you have else to say about this card?
It's so fucking good.
It's so fucking good.
I want this when I'm trying to get my commander out incredibly early.
Yep.
But most decks don't want to do that with it. I feel like you want it if your commander is insanely cheap and you are able to Underworld Breach. I think that's when you want it. I don't just want to run it in like every single red deck.
No.
But it is really good in quicker red decks or just trying to find like either really quick burst of cards or mana and have ways to repeatably do the effect with their commander in play.
Great with Rograk, cheap commanders, great with Kark if you're copying spells. Jessica's Will is an incredible one to copy. Like you said, good with Underworld Breach. Most of them, I think a good chunk of red decks are going to want to look to Jessica's Will.
Even Blue Farm, I think, still wants it, yeah.
But it's almost weirdly like not ramp. Like it's in this similar category to Culling Ritual, which is, I don't know if that's the other one you're listening
to. That's the next one I was thinking of. It's more like a mid-range kind of card.
Right, where like it's kind of a ritual. Like, yes, it does give you a huge boost of mana, but why rituals are powerful a lot of the time is they give you the speed option. Whereas Jessica's Will doesn't necessarily, it costs three mana, you know what I mean? It doesn't necessarily give you the speed boost on its own. Now, if you can make three mana on turn one, and now three mana becomes seven mana because it's turn one and someone kept a full grip, for Atali, that can be incredible.
But I feel like most of the time it's being used in conjunction with like a top deck tutor so you can get access to it right away and then use that mana on that thing.
I use Jessica's Will more often as like a win condition. It's gas. I don't use
that
it as ritual.
That is really what it is,
It's like, okay, I have Jessica's Will, so I have something to work towards. Let me work towards getting a bunch of spells in. Now, Jessica's Will is all red mana, so if you don't hit any red spells, that sucks. You have to think about that. In Rock's Eye, I have to remember Jessica's Will is a lot better if I can have a black or blue mana off to the side also, and then no matter what I hit, I can try to cast it or
but
something.
But again, that's why it's more of a mid-rangey later game piece instead of usually being used at only one side for either effect.
Still very powerful. It goes in just about most red decks. It's like my go-to for red rituals. Rite of Flame is like a more traditional red ritual and stuff, but Jessica's Will is so powerful.
But I don't think you should ever cut Culling Ritual from your black-green decks.
I think it's like the reason to be in black-green. Like if you have to be in both of those colors at the same time, which is for some reason rare, it doesn't happen that often where any of like the top decks are in black and green at the same time.
Thrasios Timna is the only one right now.
Sisse, you know what I mean? And
that doesn't even
technically
count.
Technically five color, you know, right? But it is certainly one of the biggest pulls. It's one of the best cards in Terra, I think, in like a ad nauseum style deck.
For sure.
This card is insane. Not only does it have the potential of getting rid of a bunch of stacks pieces, but it also nets you like normally 10 or 12 mana, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like an insane amount.
Gets rid of like the Grand Abolishers and everything that you were worried about.
Right.
Even turns this mana that you destroy on your side into mana so that you can power out whatever else. And it's insanely good with all of Green's creature tutors, all of Black's tutors. So like there's just so much synergy within the shells that it's in that just makes this a 99% win rate card for me.
Yeah. It also like, I think it works well with your own mana dorks, which sounds bad because it destroys them. But when you're your mana dorks tap for mana and then you destroy them and they make more mana. On your winning turn, you don't want those things anymore anyway.
No, you don't care.
They did their job. And
they essentially made you two mana.
Bingo, yeah. So like on the turn that it matters when you're casting this card, even if you have your own creatures, you're going to be glad that they go. Because, oh great, four of my mana dorks died. That's another four mana. That's a world of difference.
Exactly. What about Rite of Flame? When do you want Rite of Flame?
Rite of Flame is another one where I want, basically, if I'm casting Underworld Breach or Kroark, I don't think that I dip into it too much more than if I'm not casting those.
All of these you want to play. If they're red, they're in Itali. I'm going to not say that anymore.
Yeah, but if they're in red, you're playing Underworld Breach. So me saying, you know what I mean? Like most red decks are in Underworld Breach.
But this card is like Lotus Petal, though. Like I think of this like Lotus Petal, which it's always makes this feel way better in my mind than two.
Yeah.
And sometimes this is a red dark ritual too.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. If there are other Rite of Flames in your opponent's graveyards, which can happen, like this is going to feel like a dark ritual, like you said.
If I'm fast and have more than two red cards in my deck, I want this.
It's the same rate as Simeon Spirit Guide. So I think if you're Rite of Flame, you're playing Simeon Spirit Guide.
That's probably the other thing, right?
Yeah. Another one we can talk about is Simeon Spirit Guide and Elvish Spirit Guide, which are like really, really excellent versions of Rite of Flame because they're like uncounterable. Like someone could be smart and mental misstep your Rite of Flame at a very crucial moment.
That's true, yeah.
You know what I mean? But like being able to Simeon Spirit Guide makes a lot different.
It's a free action, yeah. The only time I don't like the Spirit Guides is when I'm in a deck that really wants to reuse its mana sources all the time.
Yeah.
Which is just like really Thrasios. Thrasios is the only time I haven't really liked them.
Yes, yeah. And the rituals, I think, all the ones that we've talked about, if you want one of these and you can play them, you want all of them. All of these rituals that we've talked about so far, not really Pyretic Ritual, the two mana red ones, but even still more so recently those, if it's a plus one ritual for like 1-2 mana, that's going to be good enough a lot of the time in the right deck. You know what I mean? You'll want all of these effects.
Yeah, I fully agree.
What other rituals are there?
The only other one that came to my mind was Infernal Plunge.
Infernal Plunge? I just cut it from Rock'sai recently.
Ah, fuck that card. Yeah.
Dramatic Reversal has gone back into the spotlight for me as a ritual. I kind of think of it as a ritual.
I've loved that card in VV.
Oh,
I have
yet. It's so good in VV.
I'm on Scepter 2 in VV, just as like another win condition. Because I don't even need to go positive. If I have VV in play, it just triggers infinitely.
Yeah, that's true.
But even just Dramatic Reversal as a way to keep me going, draw three more cards. It feels so good.
So good. So good with Wishclaw Talisman. If you're able to like, especially if you're like,
that is a cracked interaction.
Oh,
can we go over that real quick?
Yeah, because if you activate Wishclaw Talisman, hold priority. There's an activation on the stack. You're allowed to hold priority here. You can do anything that you want, like a Dramatic Reversal, to untap the Wishclaw Talisman. The Wishclaw Talisman, giving it away, is part of the resolution of the ability. It's not part of the cost. So you don't have to give it away as part of the cost. You still have it. So when you untap it with Dramatic Reversal, you can still, holding priority on the first activation, activate it again and then try to give it away again. If you're already playing keys and say one of the keys is in play, you can do it another time with the key and you can search three times up to with the wish call right away and then give it right away. When you get to do that, it's obviously fucking insane. If your opponents let you do that, you will surely win the game. But Dramatic Reversal has been huge because not only can it do shit like that, but also with Mana Vaults and the Grim Monolith and the other rocks that don't untap, but even stuff like Sol Ring, and if you're making a bunch of mana, the Arcane Sign that can help, you can help filter some mana through that way too. So Dramatic Reversal has been huge, and kind of weird that like it fell so much out of favor. When we got into CDH 5 years ago, it was one of the most played cards, I feel like. And
well,
then we
it
all
was
forgot
because
about it.
Isochron Scepter was one of the better win conditions for infinite mana that you would go for.
But it's almost like we forgot that like Dramatic is still a fine card. That's
it's
why
just
that,
a good ritual.
That's why that combo was so good at the time, is like Dramatic was still okay, and then sneaking another spell under Isochron was also fine a lot of the
time.
It
really goes to show you how busted Paradox Engine was.
Oh, yeah.
That a two mana single activation of Paradox Engine is awesome.
That's
still
a good way to think of it. It's a single activation of Paradox Engine. It's very similar to a one-time Seedborn Muse also. You know what I mean? It doesn't untap the lands versus the Gaia's Cradle stuff that sucks, obviously, but Dramatic Reversal is one that I've been really loving recently.
Yeah, me too. I've been really liking that one a lot more.
What other rituals are there? I think we talked about the main ones. There's like a couple of black ones that are like kind of bad.
Reign of Filth.
Reign of Filth.
One.
Oh, I like Reign of Filth. That one you have to really be going all in on the turbo thing. And also
on Underworld Breach specifically.
Specifically, because it's great with Underworld Breach. On a turn that you resolve a defense grid or something, and then it's your third turn, so you play a third land, Reign of Filth is going to act like Dark Ritual for you because it's going to sacrifice three lands, make three mana. Not only that, put three cards into the graveyard, which for Underworld Breach is another cast of a spell. So if you're at a very low amount of cards in your graveyard, this one can can help you, like, kind of from nothing, just like get three cards in the graveyard and go, right?
You know what else is Reign of Filth? Chain of Vapor.
Chain of Vapor is also great
I've
for that.
I've been doing this in VV a lot too, where just Chain of Vapor is on the turn that I know I'm winning. I'm just like bouncing three of my mana rocks, sacrificing the three lands that I have and go, I don't care. There's nine more cards I get to draw.
Yeah, and sometimes the sacrificing three lands, that's more important. Like, I just wanted to sacrifice three lands. I don't even care that the mana rocks are back.
I just wanted to cast LED from my graveyard one more time. Yeah,
so super, super powerful, but it's risky. Like, you can't, like, just, like, in the dark go for it. And also, Reign of Filth is interesting because it's not good on turn one, and it's okay on turn two. Honestly, Rite of Flame is still fine.
Rite of Flame is awesome!
Like, it's still good. If you're winning, if you're on the play, they're not, what are they gonna have? Interaction? Just go for it. You know what I mean?
Just go for it. Yeah, it's turn two.
But it's bad on turn one, and what's also great about Reign of Filth is it's awesome on turn six or seven. Like, if you do have to, like, survive into the late game, then it's a one mana, make six or seven mana if you've hit your land drop.
That's a crazy insane rate.
Which, like, if you're playing Rock'sai and I'm making it until turn six or seven, one of two things have happened. One, I went for an early win and I have nothing else going on and I'm dead this game. Or two, my attempt was a Rhystic Study on turn two and all I've done so far is just, like, hit my land drops and, like, interact in the game. And on those types of games, Reign of Filth is incredible on turn six. It's in the same category as Culling the Weak and Cabal Ritual in that you have to do some work for it.
You gotta be in red because you gotta want Underworld Breach.
Yeah, that's the main one,
that
too.
That is what it is.
That's the main pull, I think. Kirk also plays this because it's just a ritual, you know what I mean? So not only Underworld Breach, but yes, mainly. I think you have to be doing something with the graveyard relevantly for Reign of Filth to be relevant.
Yeah,
in your deck.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Other rituals, there's like Something of the Damned that makes a mana for each creature in your graveyard. I've seen that one
Song
come up.
Song of the Damned?
Something like that. That one has also been a little bit something,
I've seen that in some list. Yeah. I've yet to have it played against me.
Right.
Sometimes I think something that I got to keep in mind more is that weird cards and decks just might not have come up the entire tournament.
That's also very true. I have another ritual. The green creature that sacks for two red.
Yo, Tinderwall.
Tinderwall is a ritual.
Tinderwall is a ritual.
Not a mana dork.
It's a Rite of Flame.
It's a Rite of Flame.
Which is just a green one.
It's a Rite of Flame that blocks Timna.
Could kill a Timna,
right,
too.
Yeah, weirdly. I think this one's great. This is one of my main pulls to being in five-color Adnaz stuff, is this card. A second Rite of Flame is, like, truly kind of insane, especially if you're in an Underworld Breach deck, especially if you're using that red mana on a Terra or something like that. I'm using it to cast a Squeak can be weirdly helpful if you need to get it out early or something.
It is. Yes, it is.
So it can do very helpful things in those decks. So that's another thing to talk about. Orcish Lumberjack is a mana dork that acts like a crazy ritual sometimes, like a dark ritual on standby.
This card is insane.
It's very insane.
Because it feels like four mana when you finally go to use it, since the land taps for mana.
Exactly. But that one's only in Gruul decks, basically. You're not realistically playing that in three-color decks.
I did play that in some Jundad Nauseam decks, because it does make Ad Nauseam on turn two insanely easy.
But then
land him, and then second land,
ad nauseum. The thing in three colors, now you get, you're stretching your mana base a little bit and it becomes a little bit more difficult to keep
need forest. Like, it works out in two color decks because I get to play, like, excluding basic lands for forests still.
Especially it's a little bit tough in a Talad because you want to keep in mind a Tainted Pact mana base for when you flip into a Tainted Pact.
That's something we should say about every deck, though. I feel like 90% of decks want to have a Tainted Pact mana base because a lot of decks are able to take cards from other players' decks in some kind of a way.
Yeah.
Whether it's Ragavan or whether it's
Praetor's Grasp is the big one. Mnemonic Betrayal is another big one.
Exactly. Like, if you're playing any of those cards, I think you want to make sure that you have a Tainted Pact mana base, which means that every single one of your lands is different. If you play two basics, it's because you play Island and Snowcover Island.
This is the reason why some CDH lists play two, like you're saying, like an Island and a Snowcovered Island, is because they want to somehow use Tainted Pact. Because
you have to stop if you reveal a card that you've already revealed.
Yeah.
And worst case scenario is you're trying to find the one answer to something.
Right.
You're trying to find your food chain in a Tali. I do that so much, is like flipping the Tainted Pact and just use it to find food chain. It's
exactly.
Good. Yeah. You got to have yourself set up that way.
We talked about the main rituals. We talked about the main mana rocks. We talked about the main mana dorks. The only mana dorks we didn't really talk about are Bloomtender, Faber Elder, which are really
the big
only
five mana combo mana dorks.
Yeah, if you need that Wooburg specifically, if you're playing Sissei, if you're playing some deck that can really utilize that Wooburg, those
you gotta
are good
be
for
in
that.
Three plus colors, I think, to make them work.
Or Kinnan plays Bloomtender sometimes, and it makes a ton of mana.
Because it makes the same amount. It makes three. It will tap for three. I think Bloomtender tapping for three is what makes it worth the two mana and the fragility.
Yes, yeah, definitely. What else is there? Are there any other mana producers that we haven't talked about? We kind of talked about most of them.
We kind of did talk about most of them, yeah. Okay.
Should we move on to a next topic?
Let's talk talk about the next topic.
Okay. Yeah.
Let's talk about the next topic, which is from Reactive here, who says, let's do something fun, like you two rank your favorite art song cards. Doesn't even have to be CEDH playable.
I'm going to do this right from my brain without any research.
I figured we would do like a top, top three or something.
My favorite, two of them are Lance. I think I've talked about them both a little bit recently. Is it Unhinged? The first unset swamp. The one that's behind, it's a little bit in the corner of Cam's shot.
That's a great one.
That's my number one. My number two is the Alpha Mountain that's blue in the background.
You weirdly enough have talked about that one before. Yeah.
I can't remember the artist or the name or anything like that. But so that one's my second favorite art of all time. My third favorite art of all time is Olivia Valderin. It's a third leg situation.
It is.
I got my Olivia signed by the artist one time and I asked him about that. And he said, she's just like holding the dress. That's obviously what she's doing.
She's holding the dress. Yeah. It's really not ambiguous at all.
That's mainly because Olivia is like my favorite magic card of all time. That's why she's on my list of favorite arts of all time. Because like that was when I was like, oh, I like this game. This is what it is. Like,
that
I
makes
like
sense.
This.
Yeah.
So that's my third one. My fourth favorite is, it's just going to be like cards that I like. Thundermaw Hellkite. That's probably one of my favorite arts.
Yeah.
Because that was the dragon that I had was thick in the front, and I thought that was really cool. And then other favorite art, Necropotence.
Yeah.
The skull with the little spiral and a marked head in.
That's a solid top five.
Yeah, that's my top five magic card arts of all time. What are yours?
I think I'm in the same boat where a lot of my favorite art is biasly tied to cards that I like. Because my favorite would just be Sun Titan.
Right.
Because it's my favorite card and I fucking love looking at it.
Yeah. And it's because it's you.
Yeah. It's just me. It's just me at peak form.
Yeah, exactly.
And my second one would be Tarmogoyf because I love it and I just love how
the art makes no sense. The original Tarmogoyf art?
It's so ambiguous. And what I thought were eyes for years weren't eyes, and like it's so crazy.
I didn't know that I realized it was a creature, it was like a beast for the longest time. I thought I was just looking at like a hole or something.
What the hell kind of black hole mouth is this thing?
So we got Sun Titan, Tarmogoyf.
What else is good art
that you enjoy?
Atali?
Do you care about the art?
Yeah, Atali. But the one that Locum gave me specifically that has Chunky on
it. Yeah.
Like, weirdly enough, I feel like I should be the kind of guy that looks at magic and goes, oh man,
yeah,
this art is the prettiest art of all of the arts. But I'm not really good at that.
I don't think that's surprising.
I spend too much time looking at the text box and trying to figure out what the text box does.
That's the important part a lot of the time.
And the mana cost and what that does.
So you just have a top two. What was it, top two?
I have
or
a
three?
Top two. That's how I rank them.
Sun Titan and Tarmogoyf,
yeah.
Cool, I love it. Thanks for the question. Should we move on to the next topic?
And then SC Phillip says, if you were locked to a single set to build from, which set are you building a CEDH deck from, and what does the deck look like? Like, what's your commander, your win cons, and your game plan?
Interesting. So, like, my first thought is, like, Alpha, because it weirdly has, like, a lot of the best, like, mana producers, but it has, you know, what do you go into? You have no finisher. You have no gas at all.
Okay, like, you have all this ramp, but then what do you do with
Sarah Angel,
it?
Or, you know, like...
Was Drain Life in that set?
I don't know.
Is it?
I don't know. So, not that one. Innistrad is my favorite set, so I would want to Innistrad. But are there powerful cards in Innistrad? Not really.
That's what my thought would go to. Drain Life is an Alpha, so you can just ramp
Shards
into...
of Alara was Adnaz.
So was Channel Fireball, though, too, right? Can't you just Channel Fireball?
Channel Fireball is all in Alpha? Yeah, I think that's true.
Let's find out.
And then, but who's your... There's no Legends in Alpha. You can't pick a commander.
That's true. All right, so we can't do Alpha, right?
Yeah, you can't choose Alpha. It's got
to
be...
See, in Innistrad, I would just say Geist of St. Traft and then try to, like, build the standard Geist of St. Traft build and say...
Can I choose Commander Masters? he says choose a set.
Okay, I would like to choose Commander 2016.
Yeah.
So I get...
With the partners.
Timna and Thrasios. Yeah.
But what was in the actual... Commander 2016, like the cards themselves in the 99, I don't know that they were anything to speak of.
Yeah, but I have the best commanders, though.
Yeah, I think personally, if I'm allowed to choose a master set, to me, the clear pick is the most recent Commander Masters, whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's got to be the best one. I can't even think of a single thing from it, but I just assume that it must be.
Let's look.
Sort by EDH rec on Scryfall. That's how I would look this up.
You get Sol Ring.
Well, you get Sol Ring in a lot of sets, but okay.
I guess that's true, yeah. Swords to Plowshares, Path to Exile. A lot of good interactions. It's all interaction and ramp so far.
I guess the commander, Rift. You don't really get like the broken payoffs. Like, what set did Underworld
Bridge
come out in?
You get Demonic Tutor, yeah. That was the same set that Thassa's Oracle came out in.
You're kidding.
No, that was. It was our Return to Theros.
Interesting. I wonder if it should be that set? Yeah, do you want all action and shitty gas or incredible gas and no action? I guess when I say action, that's confusing. Like, do you want all... or do you want all kaboom?
All right, here's what I'm going to try to find.
Was that helpful?
Yes, it was. Theros Beyond Death, and I'm going to look for a legendary creature.
It's like Kroxa or something, but you can't play Thassa's Oracle. Any Grixis commanders in Theros?
Ooh, we could play Dalakos, Crafter of Wonders, who's one a blue and a red for a Merfolk Artificer, who's a 2/4. You can tap him to add colorless, and spend this mana only to cast artifact spells or activated abilities of artifacts.
Okay, that's terrible.
And then equipped creatures you control have flying and haste.
Okay, let's final answer. I'm going to choose
Innistrad, and I'm going to tempo you out with bad counter spells and bad bounce spells and kill you with Geist of St. Traft.
Okay. I am going to play a deck with a 3/3 in the command zone. Now, I'll play Shards of Alara. Get Ad Nauseam. I'm pretty sure Ad Nauseam is in Shards, and I'll just find a way to cast it.
Shards then?
You know what? You're right.
Everything's okay, so expensive.
I'll do... Man, dude, I have no idea. I can't figure... I have no idea. The Theros set. So I can have Thassa's Oracle and Underworld Breach. That's what we're doing. I'm going to naturally draw my deck somehow.
Yeah, exactly. I'm trying to see if there's any other... That's the only commander that can do Thassa's Oracle and Underworld Breach.
Okay. Can I choose the commander? I'm going to go back to commanders. The commander set. Commander 2025.
Okay, commander 20... So this most recent one.
The most recent one. That's the one I'm picking.
That's not how that works anymore, because now each set has its own commander set.
Is that true? No.
Yeah, so you can't choose Commander 2025. You have to choose one of the commander sets from 2025. Like, ones that just came out from Edge of Eternity, you get access to.
All right, never mind, scratch it all. I'm choosing Lord of the Rings. I'm picking Sauron. That's what I'm doing.
Okay.
Orcish Bowmasters in the deck. Scratch it all. Grixis, Sauron. That's what I'm doing.
Boom, there you go.
There it is.
And I chose Innistrad.
Innistrad. You're going to have Geist of St. Traft.
That's a mistake. Okay.
No, this will be fine.
That's all that I have from patron-submitted topics. Do you have anything else that you want to say, Dylan?
Hot.
Yeah, I'm also pretty warm.
Yeah, no, that's it. I have nothing else.
Okay.
Thanks so much for watching. If you like Sports Directly, you can do so on Patreon, like our $100 patrons.
Damn Nandes, Cumulative Upkeep MTG, Mr. Jerby, The Cardboard Cookbook, Penguin Man 089, Eli the Magic Eye, David Newman, Pat Fire, Spangler, Demetrius Clark, Larceny Roars, Joyboy Blue, Sparky B, Insomnia, SC Phillip, Olden Groupie, Zach Hartley, Reactive, Sean in the Ice, Gare Bear Garrett, Mace the Ace, Luke Cook, Connor Sipon, Joshua Day, Peter Stewart, Cornar Wild, Uncle Butts, Kwaja A, Hamid, Scott Hawk, and Baby G-Bus.
If you want to pick up any of our merch, you can do it at playtowinmtg.com.
Thank you, Dragon Shield, for supporting the show. Use code PlayToWin5 at our affiliate link down below for 5% off.
Follow us on the internet for more content.
Thank you for watching.
See you next time.
Ash Wayne, Z-Trep, Hunter the Warlock, John Koba, The Gaming Kinkajow, Dan the Man, Sarcastic, Roy Turner, Bill Bob, Mystic Muffin Man, Zachary Coulson, Jabaha, Dalton Poteet, Justin Mansolo, Jan Wild, Fang Thomas Bueno, and David Nelson. And that was almost an hour of recording, and half of it was talking about French fries and setting up.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.